this aggression against Yemen. And we stress that our military forces are ready for any, for a wide military.
Military spokesperson there speaking based on the events that have transpired. And basically he said that the only solution to stop this blockade is to... Okay, I was under the impression that it was over, but we're going to continue with this military spokesperson.
Capability to respond to our people against this aggression. We declare our readiness to say that we can inflict heavier losses against the enemy. We are also ready to take on operations on a wider scale, deep in the heart of Saudi Arabia, in the Saudi home front.
Okay, I do apologize for coming in and out with this particular connection that we're having with our feed here regarding what's happening live there in Sana'a. The Yemeni military spokesperson is speaking after the incidents that have happened. Maybe it's not just because of the incidents, but obviously that's a major factor. As I said before, he said the only solution is to stop this blockade and aggression that Saudi Arabia is holding, particularly in the port city of Hodeidah. And also he said that the Yemeni army is ready to carry out operations deep inside the heart of Saudi Arabia. Okay, let's continue with Keith Preston. Keith Preston, you were speaking before. If you can go ahead, please.
Yes, so I previously described the relationship that exists between the United States and Saudi Arabia. And as far as the war in Yemen and how that fits in with that relationship, the objective of the Saudis is to maintain a government in Yemen that is essentially a puppet of Saudi Arabia itself. Within the framework of the Gulf Cooperation Council, there's a general consensus that that their primary enemies of the Gulf state is Iran, and they are opposed to the Houthi revolution that was carried out in Yemen a few years ago, because they see this as a means by which the Shia, whom the Saudis consider their enemy in a religious and cultural sense, and also Iran, who they consider their main geopolitical rivals. They do not want to see the influence of either the Shia or Iran in Yemen. So they're trying to maintain a Saudi puppet government in Yemen. That's essentially what's going on there, and that's the reason for this war. The Americans, of course, are primarily interested in maintaining the relationship with Saudi Arabia because of the oil profits that are available there, because of the armaments, the profits that are generated by the sale of arms to Saudi Arabia. And it was for that reason that President Trump vetoed the Senate resolution concerning the war in Yemen. Now, as to why the Senate passed that resolution, I would guess that there were a number of reasons for that. Some of it was partisanship. It was a means of taking a swipe at President Trump, but also the fact that there has been a much greater level of recognition on an international level in recent times of what is actually happening in Yemen. That is, the millions of people that are in danger of starvation, the genocide that is taking place, the children that have been killed, that have died of starvation. The world opinion has awoken to this within the last year or so, whereas previously all of this was essentially ignored. Certainly in the American press, there's been almost total blackout of the war in Yemen since it began. But world opinion has awakened to this somewhat in the last year or so, and I do think that the people in the American Congress wanted to perhaps voice some sort of opposition to this. And again, I think they were trying to score some partisan points along the way. American politics is very partisan driven and very polarized. But clearly, the Trump administration is in favor of continuing the war in Yemen, and for the reasons that I've stated, because of the profitability of the armaments sales to Saudi Arabia, the relationship with the petroleum industry. We have to remember that President Trump's original Secretary of State, who is now out of office, was but Rex Tillerson was actually the CEO of ExxonMobil, the company that I mentioned that's the largest business in Saudi Arabia at the present time. And additionally, the Americans also, with the Saudi Arabians, with the Israelis, with the UAE, wish to maintain a Saudi puppet regime in Yemen. They see their all of those forces see their primary rivals as being the resistance bloc, and that is the axis of resistance. That's where Iran is the major party, but also Hezbollah, Syria, Iraq, various Palestinian groups, and so forth. They see that as their primary geopolitical rival, and they see Yemen as a battleground within that wider geopolitical context.
George Samueli, when we take a look at the number of years that have passed regarding this war and how Ansarullah fighters have not only been able to absorb much of the fighting that has gone on in terms of how they've been bombarded and some of the ground operations that have happened against them, it puts into question the capabilities of the Saudis, who are backed by U.S. intelligence and U.S. arms. And of course, this particular incident that had 7 drones involved, and as you just heard from the Yemeni army, they said that they are even able to carry out operations deep inside the Saudi kingdom. Don't you think that this would be a good time for Saudi Arabia to, I'm not going to say concede defeat, but stop this war and to continue with what the UN plan was in terms of withdrawals from the port cities, and to sit down and to continue negotiations where they were left off?
Well, of course, it's high time that the Saudis did this, but they're not going to do it. And the United States isn't going to insist that the Saudis do this. It's clear from what has gone on during this war that Saudi Arabia is a power of no significance whatsoever. Countless presidents, starting from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, have built up Saudi Arabia as this pillar of American power in the Middle East, as this key ally of the U.S. I mean, if one remembers the sort of the Nixon Doctrine back in the early 1970s, in which Saudi Arabia would be a key partner in the fight in the Cold War, you know, to restrain Soviet influence in the Middle East. And then Ronald Reagan did the same thing. You know, the Saudis were a key partner in the fight in Afghanistan and so on. The Saudi Arabia, really, it's barely a country. It really is just simply the Saudi royal family sitting on vast oil resources in bed with the Americans, making a ton of money with the Americans. The whole idea that Saudi Arabia is in any kind of a geopolitical rival to Iran is a joke. I mean, Iran is a serious country. It's a serious military power. I mean, it has a serious political system. It knows how to use its military equipment. I mean, there's no real comparison between Saudi Arabia and Iran. But what we're now getting, and this is the more sinister aspect of this, is that we have an administration in power in the United States that is hell-bent on completely reshaping the politics of the Middle East. And what that means is that Saudi Arabia, which is basically an American puppet regime, and Israel would prevail. And the only way to do that is by pushing Iran out as much as possible. So there's a kind of a full spectrum hostility bordering on military confrontation with Iran in Syria, in Lebanon, and in Iraq. And now we're getting this heated rhetoric coming from the John Boltons and the Zionist lobby in the United States, for some kind of a confrontation with Iran, because what's really at stake is they want to use this opportunity to push Iran out of as a serious player in the Middle East. Now, of course, this is a reckless policy, and it's a policy that will fail, but the situation is quite dangerous.
How dangerous do you think it is, Keith Preston? We've heard about, obviously, the rising tensions that have escalated between Iran and the U.S. At this point, accusations leveled by U.S. and Saudi Arabia and pretty much all of their allies against Iran when it comes to Yemen, they don't have the bite that it needs. We've seen the displays that the former U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley had standing behind this carnage of a rocket that it says made in Iran. And, of course, Brian Hook did the same thing. But none of them really had solid proof that Iran is somehow providing, for example, arms to the Ansarullah fighters. And Iran is supporting them, but not militarily. They are supporting just the same way they are supporting Palestinians, for example, in Israel. So this role of using Iran as a scapegoat seems to get a little bit tired at this point.
Well, the present American foreign policy with regard to Iran is just standard operating procedure when it comes to American foreign policy. It's the same kind of scenario that's been played out in many other contexts. If we look at the events that led up to the American invasion of South Vietnam in 1965, you see the Gulf of Tonkin incident. It was a very similar situation where there was American ships that they the Americans claimed falsely had been fired upon by North Vietnamese boats. If you look at the war in Central America in the 1980s, you see that the Americans were falsely claiming that the Soviets were supplying armaments to rebel groups in Central America to the government of Nicaragua. If we look at Iraq in 2003, we see the Americans were falsely claiming that Saddam Hussein continued to possess weapons of mass destruction. And the same thing is happening now. I mean, the Americans are trying to essentially create a provocative incident in the Persian Gulf involving naval concerns. And also, they're making these claims about Iran somehow being responsible for the war in Yemen, when in fact it's the American puppet governments in the region and being supplied with American armaments that are at the actual cause of the escalation of the war in Yemen. So there's nothing new about this. It's the same methodology, the same tactics that the American national security and foreign policy establishment has always used, going back for decades, even a couple of centuries in many instances. Now, it's certainly true that this is a dangerous situation in the sense that the foreign policy objectives that were lined out by the neoconservatives, who are the people who largely dominate the intelligentsia of the American foreign policy establishment, the objectives that they formulated over 20 years ago were to create a series of regime change wars throughout the Middle East and in other places. And Iraq was a part of that. Afghanistan was a part of that. Involvement in places like Somalia and Syria and other places, Libya have been part of that as well. And of course, Iran was always a target for this foreign policy objective as well. Iran is probably the most difficult target, and that's probably the reason why it's only now that the Americans are really trying to pick a fight with Iran, and why they attacked some of these other places previously because they were easier targets. Certainly, an actual war between Iran and the United States would be a disaster. It would be a disaster for everyone involved. It would be a disaster for the Iranians. It would be a disaster for the surrounding countries. It would be a disaster for the United States. The United States has entered one war after another in the past 20 years, and all they've done is wreck multiple societies and create huge numbers of refugees, casualties, wrecked economies. And what they've done in the process is create an opening for the Sunni jihadi insurgencies that are coming out of the region to grow and become ever larger than they've ever been, in part because of the support they get by the American puppet governments in the Gulf, like Saudi Arabia, like the UAE, and like Qatar. So, you know, any kind of military confrontation between the United States and Iran would be disastrous for everyone involved. Now, as the previous speaker said, the American foreign policy establishment is, at least certainly the ones who are in control of the Trump administration at present, are individuals that rarely consider these kinds of consequences. I mean, we see what happened in Iraq. We see that the outcome of Iraq was entirely predictable, and yet they went along with that action anyway. And John Bolton, in particular, the National Security Advisor, has been very belligerent and bellicose in terms of his anti-Iranian rhetoric for many years now. And he is very intimately connected with the Zionist lobby in the United States. Mm-hmm. And Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, former CIA director, is also of that mentality and that vein as well. So the United States is closer to having a military confrontation with Iran at present than it's ever been.
Okay. Finally, my question to you, final question to you, George Zamielli. We're looking at a situation where tensions are running very high. The U.S. pressure has been very confrontational with Iran, and it's been very aggressive. And, of course, we're looking at some kind of divergence when it comes to the U.S. president, his statements, and his posturing when it comes to war, and of course, a different tone taken by some of the U.S. allies, like Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and of course, Israel. The U.S. president saying that he doesn't want to get entangled in a war. That was one of the things that he said during his campaign trail. Do you think that he's being dictated when it comes to Iran from some of his allies, like Israel, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia?
I think that's quite likely, because although it's true that during the 2016 election, he spoke out repeatedly against the JCPOA, the Nuclear Disarmament Agreement with Iran, he didn't express the antagonism, the extreme hostility toward Iran that the administration is now expressing. That really wasn't part of it. He was just attacking the JCPOA. He thought that was a bad deal. Shows what an incompetent buffoon Obama was that he signed a bad deal. This animus, this ferocious hostility toward Iran, this is something new. And I think it is coming from the Zionist lobbies, the neoconservatives who have staffed his administration and who have, I think, inflicted their policy on him, and not unwillingly. I mean, you know, he's the one who sets the policy, so, you know, he has agreed to it. But you raise an interesting question, because the re-election campaign will be getting very serious very soon, and Trump doesn't want to go into that re-election campaign with a whole series of confrontations and crises bordering on war, whether with Iran in the Middle East, or with Venezuela down in South America, or with a nasty confrontation with Russia in Ukraine. That's the surest way for him to be swept out of power. So it's possible that he may come to his senses and fire some of his hawkish neocon advisors, and at least during the election campaign, staff up his administration with some more sensible, cooler heads. I'm not saying that it'll happen, but there is at least that possibility.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. That's George Zamielli, Senior Research Fellow at the Global Policy Institute. Thank you for your comments. And Keith Bresson, thank you, independent journalist and researcher, spoke to us from Richmond. That does it for our rolling coverage. Do stay with us. We have international news coming up in a few minutes' time at half past the hour. Until then, it's goodbye.